This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Followed by oyster liqueur. Good morning and welcome to Out of the Blue on Sunday, 21st of June, 2026. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, 855 on your AM dial, or you can have a listen from our website, www.3cr.org.au/radioblue, from where you can stream our broadcast, and you will also find a number of previously aired episodes that have been uploaded as podcasts. You can also check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/out of the blue radio. We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land that 3CR is broadcasting from and pay our respects to their elders past and present, and also to future generations. My name's Andrew Christie from Melbourne Polytechnic and Marine Care Point Cook, and today's weather, we've got a partly cloudy day, some good bursts of sunshine coming through, chance of a few showers, that was mainly in the morning, and a top of about 14 or 15 degrees. We've got light winds coming from the south to southeasterly direction. Winter's often a good time of the year to get out and about on the bay if you can brave the temperatures in wetsuits and so on. Last time I was in the water at Point Cook Marine Sanctuary, actually this week, back on Wednesday, I've never seen so many fiddler rays. There were five of them as compared to previous years where the numbers might be one or even zero. So temperatures, 19 to 20 degrees in the middle of June has just been amazing and quite unusual. But as always, please take care if you're getting into our beautiful bay or waterways in the state of Victoria. So today I'm joined in the studio by Jane Burton of Native Fish Australia, who also happens to be a former student of Melbourne Polytechnic, a graduate student. Jane, how are you today?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me today, Andrew.
No worries at all. Thanks very much for taking the time to come into the studio. So we'll be having a chat to Jane about Native Fish Australia and many things fish and aquaculture after this brief announcement.
Make your donation during our annual Radiothon and help us celebrate 50 years on air.
Donate to the 3CR Radiothon fundraiser this June.
To donate, call 0394198377 or go online at 3cr.org.au.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
You're listening to Out of the Blue on 3CR Community Radio, 8:55 AM. Before we get into the interview with Jane, we've got some important business to attend to, and that relates to that community service announcement just then. Please remember that we have our radiothon currently running for the station. So as part of the Community Radio Federation's donations fund, we're aiming to raise $300,000 to ensure that we stay on the air. So far, I'm glad to report we've raised, I'll have to check on the exact latest total, but last time I checked on Friday, it was $102,000. So we're clocking along at 34% of the donation total. Out of the Blue itself, to keep this program running, we're gunning for $1,500. And happy to report we achieved our target last year, but aiming to reload and go again this year. So we're about 20% of the way through the target last time I checked, $308 and some more pledges on top of that too. So I think it works out to about $418 out of the $1,500. So please remember that if you do donate money, donations of $2 and more are tax deductible. The Radiothon wraps up. The fundraising effort finishes up on 31st of July 2026 at 5 p.m. But remember that if you do want to get in ahead of that and beat the June 30 deadline for the end of the financial year, that is very much appreciated as well. If you want to donate, go to the website. It's all the W's. Give now. .com.au/CR/Out of the Blue 2026. So if you jump onto the Give Now website and search for Out of the Blue, I'm sure you'll find it okay. And remember to nominate Out of the Blue as your chosen program if you're a regular listener of the show. Money goes towards producing and broadcasting over 110 regular programs and special programs, trains and supports over 45 new programmers every year, and upgrades and maintains our transmission technology to ensure that 3CR keeps breaking through the static. Broadcast live, local and independent music also from our live music studio. Anyway, so that's the Radiothon. Any donation amount would be very much appreciated. So over to Jane. For the benefit of our listeners, can you give us a bit of an idea of your life story in a nutshell?
Well, my path's had a lot of twists and turns, let me tell you. I first studied advertising, then I ended up working in disability support, then I became a baker, then I studied furniture making, and somehow I then ended up becoming a student of yours, studying agriculture, specialising in aquaculture. And while I was studying, I started volunteering with Native Fish Australia in their conservation hatchery and rose to the position of vice president, and I'm now also the hatchery manager.
Excellent, excellent. Very good. And how do you remember your days at Melbourne Polytechnic? It was the Bachelor of Agriculture and Technology program that you graduated in?
That's the one. I remember it very fondly. It's a fantastic facility, the aquaculture centre that you have there, a really great opportunity to get some hands-on skills with fish that aren't always available other places. There's a bit of a lacking of aquaculture courses in Victoria, so that was an excellent opportunity that I'm so glad I got to be a part of.
Good to hear, and good to hear you've got such fond memories. We have very fond memories of you, Jane, in the fact that you're such a conscientious student and always getting excellent marks for your work. So,
thank you.
Yeah, well done with that. And I believe while we're talking about the Aquaculture Centre, Aquaculture Training and Applied Research Centre at the Epping campus, where we regularly conduct tours for members of the public and school groups and all that sort of thing. I believe you know Tegan Haberick, our facilities operator.
Yes, indeed. I worked with her at Aquarium Industries, Australia's largest wholesaler of ornamental fish, that I did some work experience at while I was in my agriculture degree, and ended up getting a job with them and working there for about 3 years.
Excellent, excellent. Yes, as you mentioned, the largest wholesaler of aquarium fish, I think, in the Southern Hemisphere. Amazing. And we have had a pretty close relationship with Aquarium Industries over the year. I think one of their gurus, Phil Littlejohn, was one of our students as well, come over for a little while, and Josiah Pitt as well was doing some guest lectures for us way back when. He was one of our first guest lecturers in the program from memory.
The fish scene's pretty small like that.
yeah, it absolutely is.
Everyone knows everyone.
That's it. Once you dip a toe in the water, if you don't know someone, then guaranteed you'll know someone who will. That's sort of the beauty of it, yeah. So what was it, Jane, that just sort of harking back to way back when, how was it that you, that was quite a convoluted sort of employment path up until you started studying. What was it that kicked off your fascination with fish and aquaculture and those sorts of things?
Well, when I was between jobs in my tangled career path, I had a point where I had a lot of free time, unemployed, but not a lot of money. And I thought one day, I'd really like to go visit the Melbourne Aquarium, but not quite in the budget. I thought, I'll go to a pet fish store. You know, they're free and you can take the fish home with you.
Yeah.
So I went and visited a pet fish store and just looked at the fish, and it was just so captivating and beautiful, and I don't know, I got hooked. I then started traveling around Melbourne visiting all of the pet fish stores and just go there and stare at the fish. And then I was like, I guess I'm into fish now, and seems the only way I'm going to get a new job is if I get a degree, as is the case these days. So decided to return to uni, found the only course that had fishy classes, and that's how I ended up your student.
Wow, there you go. That's a really sort of, it's a bit of a learning experience for me too. I didn't know a lot of this. This is really interesting. In all the conversations we've had, I never quite drilled down to what kicked off the fascination. Really interesting hearing people talk about their different inspirations, you know, around this sort of thing. And so that's the, that was the inspiration. And then you started studying, and then it was after you'd started studying that you got the job at Aquarium Industries, is that right?
Yep. So I got that through some work placement I'd done as part of my course.
Oh, that's right.
Yep. I guess I did something right because they decided to hire me after the work placement I did there. And I became a fish keeper there, and I developed a real passion and excitement for fish parasites during that role. A really large part of that job was disease management with the fish. When you're dealing with imported fish, they've often just come off a plane. Anyone would be stressed under that situation. High stocking densities, it's the perfect storm for the spread of disease. And so as a fish keeper in that role, your job is to try and spot things early.
Yes.
I really love fish keeping because you feel like a bit of a detective.
Yep.
The fish can't tell you what's wrong. You have to look for all the signs, just notice little things in their behavior, then look at their history, see what they've been up to, maybe do some water tests. And then often the ultimate best way to know what might be wrong with a fish is to take a closer look under the microscope.
Yep.
See if you can spot anything moving that shouldn't be.
Absolutely. Just for the benefit of our listeners, how do you go about that process with the microscopy and that sort of thing?
You identify some fish that look like something's up, something isn't right here. You select a fish that seems like it's maybe, you know, not doing as well in particular, and dissect it and take a look under the microscope, analyze all the different parts, check out all the organs. Typically, you're looking for something moving, look for characteristic movements, certain shapes and things like that. Also, the behavior of the fish before you microscope them can give you some clues of what sort of parasite they may have if they have one.
Yes.
And once I started doing that, it's just so fantastic looking through a microscope. There's this whole tiny world around us all the time.
There is.
It's so exciting, especially looking at, you know, water samples. Oh, gosh, there's so much life everywhere. And as strange as it might sound, a lot of fish parasites, I think, are actually really cute. There's all kinds of wiggly worms and little things that have tiny little eyes and funny looking hairdos. And then sometimes these big writhing masses that you're like, what are you guys up to?
Yes. Sadly, over the journey, I mean, we've been running the aquaculture facility at the Epping campus now since September 2001 was where it moved to its current location. And we'd been sort of working up to that point since about 1997, well before I was at the Institute. And one of the things that you will find if you've got a recirculating aquaculture system like we have at Epping, then you're going to get a situation where, unfortunately, despite your best efforts, you do get the odd parasite coming in. And one that always struck me was we got an infestation of gill flukes creep in one day with some of our silver perch. And I'll never forget, it led us to going through an up upgrading and improving the system, we found some of the water exchange rates in some of the tanks that were furthest from the pump weren't nearly as good as they should have been. Nowadays, they're all circulating at about, they turn over their total tank volume within about 45 minutes to an hour max. Now, back then, they were taking as much as 1.5 to 2 hours. So what we were finding was we were treating for this gill fluke infestation, and it, what was resulting was that the treatments were effective, but it wasn't long before the big reinfestations kicked in. And when that happened, I remember Micros putting gill biopsies, little snips of the tiny snips of gill tissue under the microscope, having a look and seeing the whole mass of writhing gill flukes. And I'd always start itching myself when they literally made my skin crawl, those things. So, yeah, trichodine is an interesting one. That's just more of a cute one, the little flying saucer with teeth. But yeah.
Gill flukes are my favorite. They're the cutest ones.
Yeah, I know what you mean with their little four eyes and browsing around and stuff, yeah, but they can go the other way too, little buggers. Anyway, so tell us, that's a good bit of info about the parasites and so on. Can you tell us some pretty exciting times, I believe, for Native Fish Australia at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've recently been very lucky to receive a little bit of government funding to help us run our conservation hatchery, which has made a huge difference in what we're able to do. The hatchery's always been volunteer run, and it's still largely volunteer run. But volunteers, of course, you know, they've got lives, they've got things to do, and sometimes the fish don't get as much time as they might need, especially when you're breeding fish and you're dealing with fry. Little baby fish need to eat very often.
Yes.
And often need a lot of attention and care. So with this funding, it's allowed us to, very nice for me, has allowed me to have a job and for me to really help benefit the fish by increasing our breeding efforts. We breed small-bodied native fish for conservation release. And we also sell fish to the public for maybe people who have a garden pond or a farm dam. We really try to encourage native fish keeping, especially in things like a garden pond. You know, in the unlikely, but, you know, with climate change and all, possibility that your property floods and the fish from your garden pond end up in your local waterway, I'd much rather they be a native fish than a goldfish or something like that.
That's true, absolutely. And where is the where's the hatchery located?
Our hatchery is located at La Trobe University's Bundoora campus at the Nanyak Tambari Wildlife Sanctuary. We've got a small building there just next to the Indigenous Plant Nursery.
Beautiful.
And if anyone's ever interested, we're not open at always exact times, but typically we're open on a Thursday afternoon and a Sunday morning, and get in touch. We're always happy to facilitate tours of the hatchery and always, always happy to take on new volunteers for anyone looking to get their hands wet and get some experience taking care of native fish.
Unreal. What a good opportunity. I'm sure you'll get some bites for that one. That's that's very, very interesting stuff. And you mentioned the push to try and get native fish going. What are some of the species you've got on the go at the moment?
One of the fish we recommend most often is the southern pygmy perch. They're a small native fish sort of found throughout Victoria, and they're probably a fish wherever you are that would be one of your local small native fish. We've also had a really great success over the summer breeding the southern purple spotted gudgeon. They're a bit more of a northern Victorian fish, so less suitable for ponds in the Melbourne area, but a fantastic aquarium fish. They have spectacular colours and so much personality. So we've bred more of them than I can almost house. If you come into the hatchery at the moment, it's like 50% southern purple spotted gudgeon tanks.
Wow, right. Excellent.
And we're coming into the breeding season for dwarf galaxias, which are another fantastic garden pond kind of fish. They're very small and have tiny little mouths, which makes them very frog friendly, as they pretty much physically couldn't eat a frog egg, which I know is often a concern for people who are very keen to encourage frogs in their garden ponds. So hopefully we have a successful breeding of the dwarf galaxias over the winter, and we'll have quite a few available later in the year for anyone interested in those.
Very good. All right, we might change things up a little bit. We'll go to a song. This is Fields of Gold by Sting.
jealous sun in his jealous sky as we walk in fields of gold. So she took her love for to gaze a while upon the fields of Bali. In his arms she fell as her hair came down among the fields of gold. Will you stay with me? Will you be my love among the fields of Bali? We'll forget the sun in his jealous sky as we lie in fields of gold. See the west wind move like a lover's soul upon the fields of Bali. Feel her body rise when you kiss her mouth among the fields of gold. Promises lightly, and there have been some that I've broken. But I swear, in the days still left, we walk in fields of gold. We walk in fields of gold.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
To donate, call 03 9419 8377 or donate online at 3cr.org.au.
You're listening to Out of the Blue on 3CR Community Radio, 8:55 AM. Jane Burton in the studio from Native Fish Australia. Jane, can you tell us what, apart from breeding, what else does Native Fish Australia get up to these days?
We're really focused on community education. So one of the things we often do is we go to local community events. We'll have a little table set up. We'll bring some fish tanks along with us and bring some native fish that would be local to that area so people can actually see what their native fish look like. Because a lot of the time when you go up to your local creek or river or billabong or something, you don't tend to see native fish. Fish in general are good at hiding, and our native fish are particularly good at hiding.
Yes.
And I kind of consider fish a bit of the underdogs of conservation. They're not really fluffy and cuddly, so they don't always get as much attention. And it's hard for people to have empathy for something they've never seen before.
Yeah.
And so by showing people what their local fish look like, it really helps to inspire some passion and compassion. This is what we're fighting for. This is why we have to restore their habitats. When you look at them up close, gosh, they're all just so beautiful. And I'm often asked, you know, what role do they serve in the ecosystem? Why do little fish matter in particular? Mm-hmm. And of course, they serve a very important role. But to me, I don't think we should have to justify the existence of native fish. They were there. We came and messed things up. So it's our job to fix it.
Yep.
And so I just really try hard to inspire the passion I feel for particularly small native freshwater fish, but showing people how beautiful they are, how unique, they have such unique personalities, these fish. And Australia has, of course, such unique flora and fauna. Seeing our native fish, it's just a beautiful experience. And our hatchery also offers this when people come in. We have some very large display tanks with some of our larger native fish on display, as well as the smaller ones that they're breeding. And getting people to see those fish up close and personal, have a hand at feeding them, nothing beats that for inspiring passion for native fish conservation.
Absolutely, absolutely. And some of those varieties you mentioned before, purple spotted gudgeons and dwarf galaxias, with the, as you mentioned, ecosystem sort of being mucked up and so on, we've got Gambusia by their billions in the waterways around Victoria. You've done a bit of research work on those.
I sure have. And let me just say, as I mentioned earlier about how you don't really see native fish when you go and look at your local waterways, Gambusia is a fish that you do see. People often tell me when I'm at a community event, they're like, oh, I saw a school of little fish swimming around in my local river. Guaranteed it's Gambusia. They swim near the water's surface. They're, you know, quite visible compared to our native fish that are quite good at hiding. And there's a lot of conversation at the moment about problems we have in our waterways with carp. And don't get me wrong, carp are a problem. But I think Gambusia are a really neglected topic. This is an introduced invasive fish that outcompetes our native fish. They're kind of bullies. They're notorious fin nippers. And so yes, they'll nip the fins of our native fish. And of course, having a nipped fin, it's a bit like swimming around with an open wound. This can leave our native fish susceptible to infection. They also eat frog eggs. They eat our native fish's eggs. Very competitive for food and aggressive, as I said. So they're a major problem in our waterways. And unlike any of our native fish, they're live bearers, which gives them a really strong advantage. They're very adaptable and tolerant of all sorts of conditions. And we're yet to find a way to fully manage them because of them being live bearers. A female can be carrying young and can sort of choose when to give birth and wait until conditions are right. So if you have just one female Gambusia in a water body, it just takes the one, and then when she releases her young, bam, you have a plague of Gambusia before you know it.
There you go. So what, we've got 30 seconds before we hand over to Sally with Out of the Pan. What would you say, if just very quickly in finishing, what native fish species should we be, probably a combination I'm guessing, but what native fish species can we use to try and wrest the advantage back from Gambusia in a lot of the waterways around Melbourne, you think?
I think we need to improve habitat. Our native fish really need aquatic vegetation to survive and thrive. So I think focusing on improving habitat restoration, and that will give our beautiful southern pygmy perch, the more common of our native fish around Melbourne, some nice refuge and help them out there.
Excellent, excellent. Thanks very much for coming into the studio today, Jane.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
And stay tuned for Out of the Pan with Sally. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, people.
Listening to 3CR Community Radio.